How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
You are listening to Crawl Space on the Crawl Space Media Network. If you like this show, you'll love Missing, which is also hosted by us.
Missing started as Missing Maura Murray, and now it continues raising awareness for all missing people. And we also have an entire network of shows you'll love. Check them out at crawlspace-media.com.
Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
Oh, Tim, if I was any better, it'd be illegal. How are you?
I'm doing great. And if I was any better, I would be our friends at uncovered.com. In this episode, Lance, we speak with Rachel, Ashley, Anna of uncovered.com. They are doing great things over there.
They certainly are. And if you don't know what we're talking about, go to uncovered.com. And this is a database that combines the wisdom of the community, analytics, and good old-fashioned data to help solve the cold cases of murdered and missing people. Head on over there and just check out how this is becoming a growing community. Look at the cases and really, I'm in awe of just the organization and the structure and how they've planned this out and how informative it is.
And also, Lance, they have an Indiegogo campaign that they've launched, and they're raising money to really forward their mission.
And if you want to be part of the growing community, go to their website, uncovered.com. You'll see the link to their Indiegogo campaign, where you can have the option of receiving perks such as t-shirts, the Citizen Detective Kit, or Tim, Ask Me Anythings with you and I, or you can pick one with James Renner, or you can pick one with Maggie Freeling. And that's just a few of many amazing perks that they're offering over there at Indiegogo.
Right. So if you want an Ask Us Anything with us, Lance, or Renner, or Maggie Freeling, it is $500, and you can donate on Indiegogo, but you can get there through their site at uncovered.com. Okay, everybody, thanks a lot for listening. Check out uncovered.com.
And it's not too late to get your tickets to the Saratoga True Crime Night. Tim and I will be in Saratoga Springs tomorrow night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Putnam Place. We will be joined by Josh Hallmark of True Crime Bullshit, and the event will be emceed by Saratoga True Crime Club founder Marcella Hammer.
And the whole thing is brought to us by our friends at Saratoga Living, so you can check them out as well.
Go to eventbrite.com and search Saratoga True Crime Night for your tickets before they sell out.
Welcome to the podcast, Rachel, Ashley, Anna of Uncovered. What's going on?
Hey, hi guys.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us back.
Man, it's almost unfair to start off this conversation by asking, you know, how's it going? What's going on? You know, what you've been up to? Because anyone who can, anyone with a web browser can go to uncovered.com. Still, I'm blown away that you secured that URL. uncovered.com. And you can see what you've been up to in the very short period of time since we spoke to you last. Bravo for all of your work on this.
Thank
well,
you.
There's a story about the uncovered.com address, but maybe we should get into that another time.
I think we should uncover it.
Wow. We may need cocktails to talk about that one. So that's like it's an after dark kind of episode.
Okay.
Uncovered after dark. Okay.
So tell us what's been going on with your site.
A lot. I think probably the biggest thing just for our team in general, all three of us left full-time jobs to focus on this now. So
wow.
We're in it. We're excited.
Congrats.
Yeah. So that's been awesome. We truly believe what we're building, the community that we're creating and the community that's already here. So we're really excited about that. But I think the biggest thing has definitely been the platform. And Anna, I mean, please share more of where we've been and where we're going.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm glad that you all saw the difference of the site since we last talked to you in December. But I mean, in March, we had our biggest update. I say our biggest update ever. It's our second update, but it's our biggest update we've ever had. And this really is getting us a lot closer to that vision that we've always wanted to put into the world. So if you're going to uncover it, if you're following along, or if you're driving, don't. That's dangerous. But the biggest place you can see updates on our site is really on the cold cases. And so I think probably the last time that we spoke with you, I think we maybe had 3 cases, and now we have almost 60 cases up on the site. And these are fully visualized, detailed cases with like overviews, with all the people involved, with timelines, with events. As you can see, we've also kind of updated even how people can navigate cases. We now have a map of all of our cases. You can see where they're located. Clicking into a case, you can see a lot more of the details about what happened to the case. So again, we've always talked about how we are very, very victim focused, and we ensure that, you know, yes, this is, you know, like people can be crimes and they can be statistics, but you know, the individual person, they really matter, their life mattered, they were a human. And we really want to showcase that person and show them very, very much here on these case overviews. So we start with, you know, big images of the person, we talk about who they were, and then really we dive into the details of the case. And so we've got a lot more content on these case overviews than we've ever been able to have before. So again, we show those people. The timeline is something we are so excited about. We've got not just the important events, but you can see those events on, as they happen on the map, because we know it's not just a matter of when things happen, it's a matter of where they happen. So being able to kind of pull those two pieces of data together is something that we've not seen anywhere else, and something we've always wanted to be able to do. So those are kind of the really, really big updates. Again, kind of the case layout and pulling all that information together. So we're so excited to have it in the world. We already know how we want to make it better and push it further and, you know, do more. But we're happy to have to start getting feedback on it.
It's really amazing when you go to that cases section and you see the map there. It's interactive in the sense where you see the pins and you can click on it and you see the person who is missing from that location. And then you have, it looks like a very categorized, very clear, streamlined, almost like index cards where you can then open up to more details. If I knew somebody who was missing and I went to your site and I didn't see them on there, you can submit this, right? You can submit somebody. What is your process coming from the standpoint of somebody who wants their mother, their father, their daughter, somebody who they know is missing? What's the process there? And then how do you vet that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like you said, if you go to our site, we have a big button on every page that says submit a case. And then when you actually get into the cases component, it's at the top right by the map. So there are over 200,000 cases of missing and murdered people that are currently unsolved and cold. So our goal is to be able to visualize as many as we can to get more eyes on them, to partner with as many people, to get people interacted in these cases. So Rachel's created an amazing algorithm to at least help us prioritize that. So we can put our resources, our time, and add those in a just this way that gets people interested in what we're working on and builds momentum and it activates the community. We tend to work in cases that are at least 36 months old to ensure that it's cold, that there's an opportunity, that we're not doing any harm, that we're providing as much resources and benefit as we can. But that said, if it's a family member that wants to reach out to that to us, and we work with a lot of family members in this space, we want to have that conversation with you. We want to help elevate as much as we can. If it doesn't mean completely visualizing on our site, we want to use our platform, our agency, our network to be able to get as much information as we can out there. So we make it very easy to reach out to us and have a conversation. And as I said, we're building this in real time. It's us that are working on it. So we want to make sure that we have that, that good relationship with people, that they feel supported in that.
Rachel, how do you build an algorithm? I know that an algorithm is basically an equation, right?
It is.
Okay. I hear someone, when someone says to me, oh, she built the algorithm, I'm like, okay.
It sounds very sexy, doesn't it?
You have become genius level to me. I don't understand it.
It's just a math equation. And all we do is say, hey, we want some things to boost the visibility of this case to us because they're aligning with some things that we're really interested in, such as persons of color, LGBTQ. So, or if we have an external partner, if we know that we've got a content creator or a family advocate or family member that is reaching out to us, there are so many cases. So those are factors that we want to weigh more in on how visible that case becomes to us. So we have a little score that comes up and says, hey, you know, this person has a score of, you know, 98. And we'll know that, hey, that's really touching on a lot of the key characteristics. And when I say key characteristics, it's usually those marginalized audiences, people who don't get a lot of attention. So in our algorithm, they are getting a lot of the attention. We want you to know that we get pinged almost immediately when you submit a case. So we're very aware that you have submitted a case. Someone's going to follow up with you to say, hey, we see it, we've got it, we'll take a look at it. We want everybody to know that they're important to us. We will get it up on the site. Some we may be able to get to quicker, but we will keep you informed as to where we are in that case process so that you can participate. And we want to hear from you. So please always reach out to us via that submit a case. But then I'm sure our contact information is also out there too, if you want to follow up that way as well.
And how is the community building going? You're hearing from a lot of helpful individuals?
Yeah. So we launched a beta version of our digital workspaces is where we want to activate the citizen detective community in a thoughtful way. So we've got nearly 60 people who are in there now that we're getting information back and forth from. Rachel's working with them on some detailed case research. We have a few content creators who are kind of curating their own spaces too, of kind of building their brand off of that, but also doing some additional research for their own platforms as well. So this has been a great learning opportunity for us to identify what sort of resources we need, what kind of tools, what will make this space engaging for people and keep them coming back to learn not only from the resources we have, but from the other people who are there. And that's part of the big opportunity for us as we start to move into like, what's the next phase of Uncovered and what do we want to do? So opening that community up to a wider audience, so people can come in and kind of be part of that. Experience the resources we have in there, the events that we're starting to curate, and getting feedback and adding more cases in. We know the bigger this gets, we're going to need more capacity. And that comes with an engaged and active and thoughtful citizen detective community.
And are you planning on doing any updates that are not missing person cases, maybe unsolved crimes or something to that effect? Or is this strictly going to be missing persons for the foreseeable future?
It's missing in murdered individuals and then also some suspicious deaths that are on there where family members are trying to get cases reopened or more eyes on them. So again, we want to be as big a support as we can, but we want to take the community that's out there that's listening to all these podcasts, watching all these documentaries, and find an opportunity to engage them and take their interest and turn it into advocacy. Because we know so often people listen to maybe one podcast, they'll listen to a dozen more, they immediately Google to try and find more information. We want to be that one-stop accurate information location, but provide them really distinct, clear calls to action. So if their engagement level is nil of like, yeah, maybe I'll share something on my own social media platform, to I want to be in it and I want to be rolling up my sleeves and I want to work on case research and I want to really build up like my background and knowledge in this. We want to be able to provide that to everyone because we think that's where collective impact can really happen in this space.
Is there any specific case that you're looking for volunteers on or any cases you're hoping to feature?
We're about ready to launch a public discussion forum for Karen Bodine's case. And I'll let Anna maybe talk about that because it's a little bit more on the product end. But that's going to be the real first opportunity for the broader community to engage with Uncovered in discussion. So Anna, do you want to pick that up?
Yeah. So one of the things that we know just from looking at cases is there are always some like really key questions on a case. There are key questions. There are key gaps in a timeline that people who know the case well know that these are the things that we really want to focus and put our time on. And the way that we addressed it in a previous version of our site is we had like a questions and theories area where people could submit questions, they could submit theories. There was a little bit of upvoting. It was pretty simplistic. So that's what one way we're going to be integrating the community into our site. We're going to be actually pulling in a moderated discussion area with the high level questions for the case where people can come, they can read more, they can interact. And so it's really going to be the key place where our database and our community are going to overlap, but it's going to be very clearly moderated. So it's not a free for all of, new content coming every day, but really having a case captain who is watching that discussion, who is making sure the most relevant information is there and that the things that have been debunked are not being consistently and constantly brought up again.
I really want to emphasize the organization here on your website. If you go to, for example, Brianna Maitland's profile, you can go to the overview and then the timeline, and you can click on the timeline, and it has everything detailed on the left. And then you can hit show details, and it breaks it down to specifically what that one title is. So Brianna attacked by Keely. Brianna takes her GED test. And then you can see the details on that. And then you can even see the corresponding location on the map there to the right, which is really, really cool. And again, organized and very streamlined, gives you a really good, an excellent breakdown of the significant moments leading up to the disappearance of anybody. And that's important. Like you said, if you don't have hours and hours, you can at least consume this in a manner that isn't going to take you down a giant rabbit hole. You can at least have the broad strokes and be aware of it and then decide where you're going to go from there.
You totally hit the nail right on the head. That is absolutely
I've
hypothesis.
Never seen anything
we
like
believe,
this.
I mean, this information is out there. We don't have any private access to any information that the general public doesn't have. We just go out, we bring it all together and we put it in our database to visualize on our site. So we believe if we can pull this information together, if we can put it together in an easily consumable and understandable way, people are going to make new connections that they never have been able to make before. So one thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately is the Lauren Spear case, which is a case we recently got up on our site. So I lived in Bloomington. I left Bloomington probably about like 2 weeks before Lauren Spear disappeared. And going back to this case and looking at all these locations, like that city has changed so much in the last 10 years. There are like 5 to 10 new apartments where there weren't before. But understanding a location, I feel like I can understand that case in a way that a lot of people can't, because I have definitely walked those streets late at night. I understand that city. So it's one thing to see this information, but it's another thing to have people who are like, I lived in Omaha in 2007. And I remember that, you know, this wasn't the way it was. I think there's on the Brandon Lawson case, you know, we learned from some, citizen detectives that, you know, people describe the area as wooded, and it's not a very wooded area. So again, just giving people that opportunity to say, you know, yeah, actually I'm seeing this information. It's not how I remember it. Or you're saying this person went from this location to this location. That doesn't seem possible to me.
Yeah. Particularly the cold cases. And we know outside of testing DNA evidence and breakthroughs there and technology, it's relationship changes that will spark new opportunities to open these cases and find actual more information that could lead to some sort of break in this case. So connecting that information in a way that's easily consumable, that touches on every type of learner. If you're a reader, if you're kinesthetic, if you want to, you know, really listen to everything that's out there, There's also a sources section for all of these cases. And that is where you could, if you want to do a deep dive, we list everything. We're continuously curating. We're continuously adding information in there from every podcast that's ever covered it to every PDF of a news article from, you know, back to whenever it happened to every link that we can get information on there, making sure that it's substantiated information from a reputable source. But, you know, we're doing, you know, public records requests to get information in there, but making sure that it's all publicly available information, because we think that there's so many gaps in that. And you both point out a really good point of like, it's being organized. We know that that's not happening for a lot of these cases, particularly in law enforcement, where there's not a lot of, you know, cold case units that are able to focus, or resources don't exist, or technology hasn't caught up. So if we're able to build that as a community and, you know, train ourselves in a great way and be thoughtful and empathetic along the way and make sure that victims and families are first and foremost, then that's amazing. And think of what could happen when all of those things meet together.
So you guys are doing some of the FOIAs too?
Yeah. So we actually have a partnership with the Freedom of Information Coalition, which has been tremendous. And we kicked off a public records boot camp last month, which
what?
Was amazing.
Oh,
right?
Hold on. I appreciate your answer, and I hate to interrupt, but sometimes things just come up and they get passed over so quickly. I just want to emphasize the significance of what you just said, similar to how you all got the uncovered.com URL. It's just, oh, we just got it.
You
like,
know.
That's not, there's a story there. How did you, the FOIA Commission, like, you guys are
the
buddies
Freedom
with
of Information the FOIA Coalition. So this is just the power of reaching out to say, this is what we're building. We think that you have an interest, because they work a lot with investigative journalists. They had no idea that a whole community exists of citizen detectives or people interested in information from this community. They were like, this is wonderful. This is, transparency is our number one mission. We're trying to get that out there. How can we help? Like, this is the ongoing training that we do. So we did a special 3-part series on, you know, public records requests, everything from what is a public record to how to, you know, sue pro se if you have to, because you're not getting your record like brought up. So this is an ongoing relationship we have with them, which has just been wonderful, of providing these resources. So if you go into our community, we have them available. We have the recordings available. We have additional resources and downloadables that pair nicely with like our citizen detective guide and a lot of information that we're curating. But we're pulling in experts into this, because we're not, we know that we're not, but we know that, you know, there's a gap here and we want to be able to pull that in. So finding opportunities to work with the Freedom of Information Coalition, also Purdue University, we're working with them too, but also we're learning so much in that process. That's helpful for us to take that back to our community to say, hey, here's another resource. Here's something that you haven't thought of, or here's a new process and way of doing it.
So cool. Jealous.
Yeah. And I see your community manifesto here. How do you join the community?
So right now we're on a wait list for the membership for our community, because we're actually rolling out a crowdfund here later this month, which we're really excited about, because we've always said that this community is built by the people who are there, which we're continuously learning from it. Now this is an opportunity for people to come and invest in what we're creating and help us get to the next iteration, really pulling that data component that Rachel was talking about, different resources and opportunities. So there'll be a membership opportunity, but as Anna said, all of the data will always be available for people. We want people to feel included in this process. So you can come in and interact anytime with the information that we have on there. And if there is a cost prohibitive, let us know, please reach out. But our intention is to be able to have resources and build a membership, because we know that this community is not going to be for everyone, but we want to make sure it's for the people who are invested. So if you go to our site right up at the top, it says become a member. You could click right there. You can join in our wait list. We've got nearly 100 people kind of waiting for when we open that up. But when we do open our crowdfund up here, actually next week, which is pretty exciting, one of the perks will be, you know, kind of skip that wait list and get like a white glove onboarding from our team to join the community and get set up in your digital workspace and get your resources together and kind of hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm. And we're giving away Tim and Lance as a perk too on the crowdfund.
Yeah.
Happy to be a part of that. That's definitely a first.
I'm sure those will go first immediately. I mean, sell out.
Oh, please stop.
Yeah,
stop.
Yeah.
They're already gone.
We're gonna be stale on the shelf. What does a typical work day for the three of you look like at Uncovered? Because Anna, you're the first full-time employee. I don't even know if you've all met in the same room at, have you all met in the same room, or is this all virtual?
Our team is remote. So we have other people who are part of our team too, are truly wonderful, who are everywhere from Colorado to Nashville. But actually the three of us met for the first time in person at the CrowdSolve that was in Chicago.
Oh, cool.
Right before the world closed down. And then just as recently as last week, our entire team was able to get together. Pure kismet that we happened to be available to kind of all meet up together to do an actual in-person event with a local true crime kind of meetup group. So that was the first time we all kind of met in person, but it's a lot of virtual. I mean, 2020 has taught us anything is we can do anything on screens, and we know this community exists out there already. So we're building these products and these processes for that. But I think a typical day is different for what we're focused on. For me, I'm in my inbox all the time because a lot of people are wanting to connect or reaching out with different content creators or family members or different experts to find opportunities and resources for people and, you know, creating content to kind of get out there and engage with people. But I know that Rachel and Anna, their days are very different.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think my day is a mix of like, I do a lot of the technology building. So I work really close. We have a developer that we're working with who is absolutely incredible. He has a full-time job, as we all recently did. And we were doing this on the side. But so I work a lot with him. So any design you see on the site, I probably did it, which I do my best. So it's been a long time since I actually did design work. But also kind of right now, one of the reasons we're really going into this crowdfund is because we are pretty much all of our data, we're built on low code tools. So we use kind of, you know, pre-existing databases. These things are all kind of like tied together with like duct tape. So we're really excited to potentially to move to something a lot more scalable from an infrastructure perspective. So I am putting out a lot of tiny fires a lot of the day, like fixing little, you know, issues. So when I say go to the site and email us when something is wrong or incorrect, please do that. I spend a lot of my day fixing those issues. And so the more people can kind of point out where we're missing things, the better. And then case research. I mean, Rachel really leads our case research, kind of telling us what cases we're working on. But, you know, this it's all a manual process. Every single 60 case, all the 60 cases you see on the site, you know, either Rachel, I, or our intern Mackenzie have actually gone out and done the building, done the writing for this, because we, you know, it takes us a lot of time, but we truly believe that this is the best way to get this information out.
The really cool thing about the crowdfunding is that it will help us get the capital to do some of the really cool, sexy math things that we want to do next. So for me, that is working to use artificial intelligence and machine learning and really train our algorithms to go out there and do case research like we would do, like Anna and I would do. So teaching it to know that when you Google Rachel Roslett, you don't want Rachel Roslett, the PhD student, you want Rachel Roslett, the murderer, and to pull in all of that information and then to look through the duplicative information and call it down. But then also it'll be assigning credibility or believability factors to the sources of information. So perhaps something you find on a blog somewhere, it'll go into the algorithm, but maybe it'll be a low priority. But if it's found out on NamUs or the Doe Project or the Charlie Project, it's going to get a lot of weight, a lot of importance. And then return all that information to us. We come back as like a data scientist and say, yep, 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 yep. And then it goes up on the website. So we're really hoping to really get that infrastructure that Anna was talking about to be able to do some of these really cool AI sorts of things with the data that's out there.
Your structure that you just explained is amazing. And that's all like behind the scenes stuff. And I think it's super important for people to understand how much work goes into it with such a small team working probably all the time. Because when you're doing something like this and you're building it on your own, there's no 9-to-5, right? I think we had mentioned during our first conversation that this would work itself really nicely. It'd be nicely incorporated into a live event. Are you planning on doing, now that we're able to do these things, are you planning on going big and doing something huge, or are you going to do some, you know, maybe small coffee shops to warm up and then hit Broadway?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Can we please introduce you? Can we be the MCs?
Oh my gosh, 100%.
We have done it on a small scale, virtually with Purdue University, like Ashley mentioned, where we did basically a hackathon and gave them all the tools and resources to really go out and research cases for us live, all in real time. And we were there to help shepherd them through that process and give them tips and tricks. And, you know, we are, some of those cases are on the website now. So hopefully we'll be able to do that soon. Ashley?
Yeah, there's a huge opportunity there. And that was just an amazing learning opportunity. And that was centered around missing and murdered Indigenous women. And we wanted to make sure that we had a really good representation in advance of Awareness Day, which was on May 5th, and continuing to curate cases. And unfortunately, so many of those cases have little to no information about them, except that someone has gone missing or a murder took place. So that was an opportunity for us to say, here's a list of what we know, and then working really diligently and, you know, a 4-hour time frame of, you know, here's the template we're going to use, here's the resources, we're available, we're all kind of in these Zoom rooms, we're checking in and out, we're making sure that we're asking questions the whole time so people felt part of the process. And it was a great learning opportunity for us to see this was good, this was bad, and it was the first time we kind of debuted our digital workspace, which was wonderful. So continuing to host those types of events, because we know so many of our members are all over the country. But also in real time, I mentioned, you know, we were just able to meet up as a group and do a live event, which was wonderful. And that was just kind of sharing what we're building. But finding those opportunities to work locally, either with, you know, a partnered content creator who's probably doing a local story or something that's happening, so we can leverage community excitement and opportunity. And to do the research, because, you know, if you have a laptop or even a smartphone, great, find information and submit it, and we're able to get it up and visualize it in real time and get it in front of people. So there's a huge opportunity from a research perspective to be able to do these types of live events. But we're also curating an ongoing series called What is a Citizen Detective? And we've hosted probably 3 of those already. We have actually one coming up later this week and then one later in the month. What is a citizen detective? What does that mean? What do I have to do, or what shouldn't I do? And introducing them to people who were doing this work. So the first one we did, which was truly wonderful, was with Dana from True Crime PI, who originally started her career as a librarian, spent many years doing research, working in libraries, but had this affinity for finding information on missing and unidentified people, and has since made the jump to be a full-time content creator in that space. She's actually currently working with the FBI. She might have identified one of Samuel Little's victims. So she's able to use those skills, which is wonderful. She's in our community right now. She's one of our great partners that we have. So she just kind of talked about her story, her trajectory, how she got to where she was. People could ask questions. We keep it really intimate. And then she talks about tools and cases that she's following, so people can share information. They can kind of raise their hand to say, this is what I'm interested in, or this is what I'm doing. So we've provided opportunity for people to kind of dip their toe in, or also to be like, hey, now I know Dana and I can kind of connect with Dana. So we think that that's an opportunity to also do that live of, you know, meet someone that you know is probably in your community or just down the street. And then you have, you know, an even bigger network, not only in this true crime community, but someone who's local to you too, who could also help do additional research.
And we know there's true crime clubs that are going to start ramping up back in person, have cases close to their heart that they've done a lot of work on. And we would love to talk to those people to take all the work that they've done and put it up on the web so they can see it. And we do feature, we show on the front page of that case a featured contributor. So they will get credit for all the hard work they've done. We just want to provide them to the space to get that information up about the victim and help get some information flowing in about the case.
All of these ideas that are swirling around, and some of them are there on the database, on the website. Some of them you've put into action with the Citizen Detective workbook or guide. Where do you organize all of this internally? And this is just, I guess, a question. I'm just curious. You have all of these plans. Uncovered has such huge potential. How do you make sure that you don't forget these really great ideas and missions?
This is my moment to shine because I... I am a tool queen, so I am constantly bringing new tools into our Uncover lives. But we use a tool called Notion, and it is just all about documentation. And so we have been using that pretty heavily just to document everything. As far as like all of these things we want to build, I mean, this is the classic, you know, everybody who works in technology has this problem. There's so many things that you could do. There's so many cool ideas that you have. So we really try to run everything through just a backlog. So we try to capture every single idea that we have. And then when the time comes to say, okay, what are we going to build next? We just go through prioritization. So we try to understand what are our short-term goals? What are our long-term goals? And then what are the things that we could build to help us get to those goals? And I mean, things have already changed for us. We've had amazing ideas that we have definitely backburnered. It just doesn't make sense for us to do. We've built things, you know, a year and a half sooner than we thought we were going to do. So it just kind of things change, things depend. We have been spending a lot of time just talking with people who are using our site and getting feedback, which has been absolutely incredible. As you know, some of the beta members of our community, some other kind of more people have expertise in other areas, just kind of getting their feedback. And that helps us prioritize as well. Because again, like Ashley said, we're not from this industry, from this area. You know, personally, my background's in tech. So I know how to build tech, but I don't know necessarily, what DOE investigators do or what forensic genealogists do. So as much time as we can spend with people, everybody who at least even just takes 30 minutes to talk with us, we always learn something new and incredible. And that really, really helps us prioritize what to build next.
There's a really cool article here that you wrote, 8 tips for capturing clues in true crime photos. And scrolling down a little bit, I see some photos of Maura Murray's ATM stills. That's I think that's great that you are sort of putting this out there like that. Can you talk about the idea behind this article?
Yeah, sure. That's actually from one of our community members. So Tiffany C.
Oh, it's amazing.
Is one of our citizen detectives in our community, took this amazing genealogy class in Boston U and was like, I learned all this information. I want to be able to share it. So we're able to provide a platform. So like I said, we are, for the most part, we're not creating content. We're curating, we're finding opportunities to build in research components, but we want to be able to provide a platform for people who have this expertise, have this knowledge transfer. In Tiffany's case, I took this class. I was really motivated by it. And I think that I can contribute. Is that okay? Yes, 100%. We would love to be able to do that, feature you and use your expertise that other people can learn from, which is actually wonderful because now Tiffany is in our community, in our digital workspace. Another person has said, hey, I'm thinking of taking a genealogy. Does anyone recommend a class? And Tiffany was able to say, I took this. This was wonderful. So building those relationships and those networks, and then taking that information where we're learning along the way and sharing it with each other. And these are resources that we want to put out there for everyone to be able to interact with. When you get into our community, it's more intimate and you have more hands-on, but the stuff that we're creating, as Anna said, we want everyone to have access to information, to an opportunity to contribute at whatever varying degree and whatever level, but we know that we can make a real impact with the info that we're putting out.
Thanks for bringing that 8 tips up, Tim. This is ridiculous. This is so helpful. And I don't want to say this in a bad way, but it's a challenge. It feels like when you look at the photos, they also have the Delphi murder suspect from the video, him walking away. I'm assuming it's a he walking away. And again, I don't want to say this in any way discrediting the victims of these murders and crimes, but this is a challenge for someone who will look at something like a security still or something taken from a cell phone and challenge yourself. Go to this and challenge yourself and look at these 8 tips and see what you can find. It's like a puzzle, and that's why these citizen detectives do what they do, because they're obsessed with untangling the knot. And this is incredible. This 8 tips thing is incredible. I'm blown away.
We just don't know what we know sometimes. And I think it was Anna that shared, and Anna or Ashley shared an article on Slack with us last night where someone had identified a Jane Doe just because they compared a missing poster and a poster of or some sort of photo of the victim who was unidentified, called in an anonymous tip and the case is solved. So I think as citizen detectives, we do have the power to turn the tide in some of these cases. And Lance, as you were saying, I mean, just spending a few minutes looking at a picture and taking that up as a challenge to see what you can find, you never know. It could be the difference.
One of the things that we added to the site with our new redesign was the What's Left to be Uncovered section, which we're really excited about. So this is the place on the site where if you go to the case overview, these are the things that the case needs. So these are the places and the opportunities for advocacy. So a lot of times there are petitions to either reopen a case, to, you know, get another look. There are GoFundMes, you know, that people are trying to hire private investigators or they're trying to hire attorneys. But sometimes there's a legitimate actual request. So I think Faith Hedgepeth's case is a great example. Just listen to this voicemail. What do you hear in this voicemail? I mean, that's what we really want to be able for people to do, to say, I am interested in advocating on behalf of this case. What can I do? Is it my time? Is it my money? Or do you want me to apply this interesting skill that I have? And that's where that's one piece of the new update we haven't talked about, but we are really excited about.
Yeah, being able to break it down and what can you do in the next 5 minutes, the next 5 hours, the next 5 days. We want to provide, you know, from soup to nuts, what people can kind of get involved in. So if it is something very specific of, you know, look at this photo, confirm this address, listen to this recording, or follow up, keep this story on social media channels and amplify that way. So not everyone can do everything, but everyone can do something. So here's an opportunity that, you know, you can step in, use your power to help other people. And truly turn an interest of, you know, listening to this content, kind of consuming this and turn it into advocacy. And it's not that hard. It's just a few simple steps. We conducted a research poll, and I think we kind of shared this with you last time, but it's been very much reiterated on all of the updates that we've provided, particularly people who were interested in this work or what would spur them to action. So this notion of asking 500 people who were interested in true crime, what would get you to do the next step? Knowing the victim, we have tremendous family advocates in this space who are wonderful and are taking a lot on. So to be able to help and come alongside, that's phenomenal. Second was, you know, affinity to location. So I know the area, it's kind of from my hometown. I kind of grew up there. I could substantiate some information. Like Anna said, you know, growing up somewhere where a crime happened 10 years ago, it's a very different city. And third was just being told what to do. So much like in politics, people don't do anything until they're, you know, asked to do something. Here we're asking you, you know, use your time, use your platform that you have, really truly help someone in this space.
You had said that you take on cold cases that are how, like, what's the minimum for the length of time that they've been cold?
We usually do about 36 months. That's when, you know, just a little research on our own, that's when things start to slow down a little bit. We never want to interfere with an active open investigation. I realize they're all still open, but a very active ongoing investigation. And truthfully, the older ones are not more important. They're just as important, but there are so many out there that are getting zero attention that have been unsolved for years and decades. And we just want to show love to all those victims to say, we see you. We're going to pick up the torch for you and run with it to see what we can bring to the case. So we welcome all cases. We just have an affinity for ones that have been out there a while and haven't gotten any love.
What's the cap, if any, for the how old they can be?
No cap per se. I don't think we've ever discussed that. I don't know that we have any older than 50, 60 years or so, but no cap. I think we're open to everything at this point.
We actually were actually just talking about this yesterday when we were doing like our weekly case meeting, and it's a missing person case. It was one of, I don't know if it's the oldest we have on there, but from a missing person perspective, from missing person database, it's like the oldest case that's on the national like registry of missing children. And was it from the 50s or the 60s?
It was from the 50s, yeah.
Yeah, and she was a small child. There was like a house fire. Everyone kind of evacuated the house. We're kind of standing in the front yard, and she just disappeared. And those types of cases are ones where we think from a genealogy standpoint, you know, someone got a 23andMe at Christmas, that could probably get solved. There's a lot of cases like that, particularly these older missing children cases where we think there's an opportunity just to keep those stories out there and let people know that, yeah, this is a tragic story, but some of these are like, if you just upload your DNA to a database, that could help really like open up some of these other cases that people have been missing for years and years.
Yeah, I think we see this as a very collaborative opportunity because there are already incredible existing databases out there. So we mm-hmm. hope to continue to build on the shoulders of what the work that a lot of people have already done. And yeah, like Rachel said, partnerships, we are very excited about partnerships, content creators, you know, people doing this type of work. DOE networks is something we're really interested in exploring as well. So definitely reach out to us for sure.
What do you do aside from this? I just want to know one hobby from each of you. Give a little glimpse into behind the uncovered curtain.
I am totally a dog person. I used to foster dogs, but now I actually have my own side gig of dog walking, dog sitting. So on my lunch breaks, I walk dogs and I go to people's houses on the weekend and do stuff like that.
I am a big like consumer of TikTok. I picked that up in the pandemic and I spend hours on that. That is my sweet release. My For You page is bananas, from everything from learning from teachers trying to teach remotely to every small dog you can ever imagine to just anything in the world. So I'm on there all the time consuming as much information as I can.
Awesome.
Ashley got me on TikTok, and my For You is all about van life, which is super weird because I'm the opposite of a person who wants to live in a van, but I'm just so interested in how people do it. For me, I think, you know, we do spend a lot of time like inside this work. And so I just like to like trash TV. That's a good way for me to just like put my brain somewhere else for a little while. I think we all feel so lucky to be able to do this work and work in this space because it's been such a passion for us for so long. So it is kind of hard to disconnect from it because we are so excited about this, about the work that we're doing.
I can't believe all of you got the question wrong. It was listening to shows on the Crawl Space Media Network.
Oh, so that's
now,
obvious.
That's on all the time.
Interview over.
Thank you.